Shivatha Vandanishwara ki jai.
Shri Shri London Jatra ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Datho Jaya Mudirayat Nastaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamashloke Bhakir Bhavati Naishtiki. Janati Miranda Sagan and Jana Salakaya Chaksuranam Jaina Tasmai Sugar Venam Hasri Chaitanaman, which some stopped it on me in Bhutale, Swam Upakaramayam, Dalati Sva, Padantikam. So, on this auspicious occasion of Govardhana Puja, one of Krishna's most glorious pastimes, we read from Srimad Bhagavatam where these pastimes are enumerated. And we're very grateful to the devotees who carried on this translation after Srila Prabhupada, Vidyananda Maharaj and his team of translators and researchers to bring us this wonderful literature to complete the great work that Srila Prabhupada had started, is what he was referred to as his magnum opus, his great work, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a work that Ajit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said is the most important literature to understand the highest development of transcendental love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So I'm going to read and comment a little, and I want to offer my respects to my godbrother Ron Shor Prabhu, who also asked to maybe say some things during this presentation. Actually, one has to, before speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, pray for the mercy of all the Vaishnavas and get their blessings. When the tongue is uncontrolled, it wreaks havoc. And at the same time, when the tongue is controlled, it can purify all the senses and all of our existence. Vacho vegam, mana sakrota vegam. So, we'll seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas that I can speak something worthy from whatever small reservations I may have about Srimad Bhagavatam in this pastime, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and Prabhupada's disciples who have worked so hard to bring this great literature to the world at large. So the 10th canto, 24th chapter, begins worshipping Govardhan Hill. Shishuga uvacha bhagavan apitatraiva baladevena samyuta apasham nivasam gopan indra yaga pritodhyaman. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, while staying in that very place with his brother Baladev, Lord Krishna happened to see the cowherd men busily arranging for a sacrifice to Indra. Prabhupada's purport. No, not Prabhupada's purport, his followers' purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami and other acharyas, the words tatra eva in this verse indicate that Lord Krishna stayed in the village of the Brahmins whose wives had satisfied him by their devotion. Thus he gave his mercy to those Brahmins as well as to their chaste wives who had no one to associate with except their husbands. In that place, the cowherd men headed by Krishna's father Nanda Maharaj were somehow or other preparing an elaborate sacrifice to Lord Indra, and Lord Krishna reacted as follows. I'll just read the verses and the purports without giving the numbers. Being the omniscient, this is translation, being the omniscient super soul, the supreme Lord Krishna already understood the situation, yet still he humbly inquired from the elders, headed by his father, Nanda Maharaj, purport. Lord Krishna was eager to enact the pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, and defeating the false pride of Indra, and thus he cleverly inquired from his father about the imminent sacrifice. Read. Next text. Lord Krishna said, "My dear father, kindly explain to me what this great endeavor of yours is all about. What is it meant to accomplish? If this is a ritual sacrifice, then for whose satisfaction is it intended, and by what means is it going to be executed?" Translation. "Please tell me about it, O Father. I have a great desire to know, and am ready to hear in good faith. Certainly, no secrets are to be kept by saintly personalities who see all others as equal to themselves, who have no conception of mine or another's, and who do not consider who is a friend, who is an enemy, and who is neutral." This mentality or attitude is also presented in the third canto by Lord Kapiladeva, that one should make friends with one's equals, one should offer great respects to the devotees of the Lord, and one should be very compassionate to those who are neophytes. Mahatabahumanina dinana manukampaya. Maitra chai vatmatulyeshu yamena niyamena cha. It is also mentioned in the 11th canto. There's a conversation between Kavi and Arjnimi, in which the same process is mentioned, that the Majjhima Adhikari, one who is in the Majjhima or middle stage of devotion, should offer his respect and devotion to the Supreme Lord. Ishvara Tadadhineshu. He should make friends with his equals, and he should see, or he should make friends with the devotees of the Lord, it's said there. He should consider those people who are innocent to be those he should offer compassion to. Balisheshu, that they are like children. He should see the masses as innocent, and he should avoid those who are envious. Purport. Lord Krishna's father might have thought that his son was a mere child and thus could not properly question the validity of a Vedic sacrifice. But the Lord's clever statement here would certainly have convinced Nanda that Sri Krishna was making a serious, not a whimsical inquiry, that had a serious, and that a serious answer should thus be given. Translation. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. Purport. Even if Nanda Maharaj did not see friends and enemies and neutral parties as entirely equal, Lord Krishna, being Nanda Maharaj's son, was certainly a most trustworthy friend and should therefore not be left out of intimate discussions. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder he could not act on the highest saintly platform, and thus Lord Krishna furnished additional reasons why his father should trust him and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj stood silent, doubting his position of parental aloofness, since Garga Muni had predicted that his son would be equal to Narayan in his qualities, and the young boy had already killed many powerful demons. Are these purports by Rida Nanamaraj and company? I just wasn't sure where Prabhupada left off. Is that true? Translation. When people in this world perform activities, sometimes they understand what they are doing and sometimes they don't. Those who know what they are doing achieve success in their work, whereas ignorant people do not. Purport. The Lord here informs his father that people should perform a particular ceremony or activity only after thoroughly understanding it through discussion with friends. We should not be blind followers of tradition. If a person doesn't know what he's doing, how can he be successful in his work? This essentially is the Lord's argument in this verse. Since Sri Krishna, as the young child of Nanda, would naturally be expected to show enthusiasm for his father's religious activities, it was his father's duty to give the son a thorough explanation of the ceremony. Lord Kapila also stresses that one should try to see everyone equally. As one's own self, one should feel the pains of others as one's own pains. Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says one should adopt the attitude of being paradukaduki, feeling great compassion for others. And Lord, in the instructions to Lord Kapila, it is said, Atmarascha parasyapi yat karo dhyantaro daram. tasya bina drisho mrityu vidadevayam ubanam. Anyone who sees others as and makes a difference, or sees them with what he translates, Prabhupada translates, as a differential outlook, instead of seeing him as his own self, I come to punish him like the blazing fire of death. Translation. Such being the case, this ritualistic endeavor of yours should be clearly explained to me. Is it a ceremony based on scriptural injunction or simply a custom of ordinary society? Translation. Nanda Maharaj replied, the great Lord Indra is the controller of the rain. The clouds are his personal representatives, and they directly provide rainwater, which gives happiness and sustenance to all creatures. Purport. Without clean rainwater, the earth could not possibly provide food or drink for anyone, nor could there be cleanliness. Thus, it would be difficult to overestimate the value of rain. And of course, we know that as our age of quarrel progresses, that it is difficult to get proper food or proper water, and so much rain is now considered to be acid rain and killing many of the forests in this part of the world. Translation. Not only we, my dear son, but also many other men worship him, the Lord and Master of the rain-giving clouds. We offer him grain and other paraphernalia of worship produced through his own discharge in the form of rain. Report. Nanda Maharaj patiently tried to explain the facts of life to his young son, Krishna, but in fact, Nanda and all the residents of Vrindavan would learn an astonishing lesson, as explained in this chapter. Translation. By accepting the remnants of sacrifices performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and accomplish the threefold aims of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Thus, Lord Indra is the agent responsible for the fruitive success of industrious people. Purport. One might object that people sustain themselves by farming, industry, and so on. But as previously mentioned, all human and non-human endeavor depends on food and drink, which cannot be produced without ample rain. By the word Trivarga, Nanda further points out that the prosperity achieved through sacrifice for Indra is meant not merely for sense gratification, but also for religiosity and economic development. Unless people are well fed, it is difficult for them to execute their duties, and without performance of duty, it is very difficult to be religious. What time is their class end today? Translation. This religious principle is based on sound tradition. Anyone who rejects it out of lust, enmity, fear, or greed will certainly fail to achieve good fortune. Purport. If a person neglects his religious duties because of lust, envy, fear, or greed, his life will never be brilliant or perfect. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Keshava Krishna heard the statements of his father Nanda and other senior residents of Raj, he addressed his father as follows to arouse anger in Lord Indra. Purport. Shishir Swami explains that Lord Krishna's intention was not simply to insult a demigod, but rather to knock down the great mountain of false pride that had arisen within the Lord's tiny servant, who is supposed to represent the Lord as Indra. By lifting Govardhan Hill, Lord Krishna would thus initiate a blissful annual festival called Govardhana Puja, and he would further enjoy the pleasant pastime of dwelling for several days beneath the hill with all his loving devotees. Translation. Lord Krishna said, it is by the force of karma that a living entity takes birth, and it is by karma alone that he meets his destruction. His happiness, distress, fear, and sense of security all arise as the effects of karma. Purport. Lord Krishna minimized the importance of the demigods by speaking the philosophy known as Karmavada or Karma Mimamsa, which, basically, is atheism with a belief in reincarnation. According to this philosophy, there are subtle laws of nature that reward or punish us according to how we act. As you sow, so shall you reap. In the future life, one reaps the fruit of his present work, and this is the sum and substance of reality. Lord Krishna, being God himself, could hardly be a serious proponent of this mediocre philosophy. In the role of a young boy, he was simply teasing his pure devotees by preaching it. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that Lord Krishna was thinking, why are these eternal associates of mine appearing as my father and other relatives and friends so caught up in this worship of Indra? Thus, although the Lord's main purpose was to take away the false pride of Indra, he also wanted to remind his eternal devotees that they need not divert their attention to other so-called gods, since in fact his devotees were already living with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Almighty Lord Himself. Translation. Even if there is some supreme controller who awards all others the results of their activities, he must also depend upon a performer's engaging in activities. After all, there is no question of being the bestower of fruitive results unless fruitive activities have actually been performed. Purport. Here Lord Krishna argues that if there is a supreme controller, he must depend on a performer of activity to reciprocate with, and must therefore also be subject to the laws of karma, being obliged to award happiness and distress to conditioned souls according to the laws of good and evil. This superficial argument neglects the obvious point that the laws of nature that prescribe the good and bad results of pious and impious acts are themselves creations of the all-good Supreme Lord. Being the creator and sustainer of these laws, the Lord is not subject to them. Furthermore, the Lord is not dependent on the work of the conditioned souls, since he is satisfied and complete within himself. Out of his all-merciful nature, he awards the results appropriate to our activities. That which we call destiny, fate, or karma is an elaborate and subtle system of rewards and punishments meant for gradually encouraging conditioned souls to evolve to the stage of perfect consciousness, which is their original constitutional nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has so dexterously formulated and applied the laws of material nature governing punishment and reward for human behavior that the living being is discouraged from sin and encouraged toward goodness without suffering any significant interference with his free will as an eternal soul. In contrast to the material nature, the Lord exhibits his essential nature in the spiritual world, where he reciprocates the eternal love of his pure devotees. Such loving affairs are based completely on the mutual freedom of the Lord and his devotees, not on a mechanical reciprocity of coinciding selfish interests. The Supreme Lord, assisted by his pure devotees, repeatedly offers the conditioned souls of this world the opportunity to give up their bizarre attempt at exploiting the material universe and go back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Considering all these points, the atheistic arguments given here by Lord Krishna in a playful mood are not to be taken seriously. Translation. Living beings in this world are forced to experience the consequences of their own particular previous work. Since Lord Indra cannot in any way change the destiny of human beings, which is born of their own ignorance, born of their own nature, why should people worship him? Purport. Lord Krishna's argument here is not a negation of free will. If one accepts the existence of karma as a system of laws awarding reactions for our present activities, then we ourselves, according to our nature, will decide our future. Our happiness and distress in this life have already been adjudicated and fixed according to our previous activities, and not even the demigods can change that. They must award us the prosperity or poverty, sickness or health, happiness or distress due us by our previous work. However, we still retain the freedom to select a pious or impious mode of activity in this life, and the choice we make will determine our future suffering and enjoyment. For example, if I was pious in my last life, in this life, the demigods may award me material wealth. But I am free to spend my riches for good or for bad purposes, and my choice will determine my future life. Thus, although no one can change the karmic results due him in this life, everyone still retains his free will by which he determines what his future situation will be. Lord Krishna's argument here is quite interesting. However, it neglects the overriding considerations that we are all eternal servants of God and must satisfy him by all that we do. Translation. Every individual is under the control of his own conditioned nature, and thus he must follow that nature. The entire universe, with all its demigods, demons, and human beings, is based on the conditioned nature of the living entities. Purport. Lord Krishna here elaborates upon this argument given in the previous verse. Since everything depends on svabhava, or one's own conditioned nature, why bother worshipping God or the demigods? This argument would be sublime if svabhava, or conditioned nature, were all-powerful. But unfortunately, it is not. There is a supreme controller, and we must worship him, as Lord Krishna will emphatically reveal in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. For now, however, he is content to tease his relatives. Translation. Because it is karma that causes the conditioned living entity to accept and then give up different high and low-grade material bodies, this karma is his enemy, friend, and neutral witness, his spiritual master and controlling lord. Purport. Even the demigods are bound and limited by the laws of karma. That Indra himself is subordinate to the laws of karma is explicitly stated in the Brahma Samhita. Yas pindra gopa ata vindra mahosva karma bandana rupa palabha janamata no ti. The Supreme Lord Govinda awards all creatures the appropriate results of their work. This is as true for mighty Indra, the Lord of the material heavens, as it is for the germ called Indragopa. In Bhagavad Gita 7.20 also states, Pamastaistha hirita jnana prapadyante yadevataha. Only those who have lost their intelligence because of various material desires surrender unto demigods rather than worship the Supreme Lord. In fact, the demigods cannot award benefits to anyone independently, as stated by Lord Krishna in the Gita. All benefits are ultimately issued by the Lord Himself. This is not altogether incorrect, therefore, to say that demigod worship is useless, since even the demigods are under the laws of karma. In fact, this is the case, but Lord Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is not subordinate to the law of karma. He can independently offer or withhold His favor. This is confirmed in the verse from Brahma Samhita above quoted. The third line of which is Karmani Nidhati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajam. The Supreme Lord burns up all the accumulated karma of those engaged in His loving service. Not only is Lord Krishna above the laws of material action and reaction, but He can immediately dissolve these laws for anyone who satisfies Him through loving service. Thus the Almighty God is supreme in absolute freedom, and by surrendering to Him we can escape the bonds of karma and stop accepting their dismal rule as supreme. So this Govardhana Puja celebration can be a great exposition of faith in the Supreme Lord, inasmuch as we produce mountains of prasadam. Someday we'll produce huge, huge mountains of prasadam, and all the world can come to see that the Lord provides enough for all His devotees. So as will be revealed in these coming verses, there is a great feast that depends not on anyone but Lord Krishna Himself that takes place. A great feast of devotion and a great feast in terms of sustenance for all living beings. When people are followers of karma mimamsa or the atheistic philosophy, they think that the world cannot supply all of the inhabitants, all of the human beings on this earth. So as early as 40 or 50 years ago, there were economic theories which stated that the world would not be able to support its population, that the population would outstrip the food supply. And many figures were given, detailed statistics about how in 10 years, 20 years, if at the present population growth, the world would not be able to sustain its population. Then as these figures proved to be incorrect and the population didn't outstrip the food supply, these figures were revived. And those who created them, or so-called compiled them, said that they had made a miscalculation in the beginning, and therefore, through the process of calculation, it became very wildly distorted, and they were very sorry that they made a mistake. But if you make a mistake in the beginning of a calculation, it can become magnified thousands of times. So then further predictions were made, and those were also proved to be incorrect. So the point is, we learn from the 10th canto that the world was supporting a very, very large population, that Nanda Maharaj had hundreds of thousands of cows to support. So from the transcendental perspective, we can understand that there's a deity of the earth, Mother Bhumi. And just as a human being provides milk, a mother, the body provides milk for the offspring or pregnant mother. So the earth also has a relationship, Mother Earth, Mother Bhumi, with all of her inhabitants, and therefore can supply all the necessary ingredients for any number of living entities, humans and otherwise, on the face of the earth. Of course, if she becomes displeased, as has happened in the past, by sinful activity, then she can voluntarily, by her great mystic Shakti, she can withhold some of the benefits of human beings, including the plants which sustain life. So this is the transcendental vision. If one becomes transcendental and doesn't try to, by artificial means, increase, but understands that there's a transcendental nature, that Krishna is actually the controller of all the demigods and all of material nature, then there can be prosperity throughout the whole earth. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, that if one gives one's devotion to Lord Krishna, then all of the demigods, Lord Indra, Mother Bhumi, and all the rest are satisfied. And in our microcosm of Krishna consciousness, we understand that nobody's actually going hungry. In fact, Prabhupada said many times that, especially he was lecturing in Mauritius where they were growing sugar cane as their main cash crop, he was chastising them because when the sugar market became weak and the prices were lower in other parts of the world, this country, which depended almost completely on its sugar exports, became very destitute. It became very weak in its economy. So Prabhupada was chastising them. You should grow your own food, your own rice, your own grains, and not depend on artificially on trading with countries outside. And he said at that time that the earth can support 10 to 20 times its present population. So the atheists of the world, in order to support birth control and abortion, they tried to foist many ideas of artificial birth control, sinful activities on the population at large, so that they would satisfy their ends on the argument that the population would outstrip the food supply. Translation. Therefore, one should seriously worship work itself. A person should remain in the position corresponding to his nature and should perform his own duty. Indeed, that by which we may live nicely is really our worshipable deity. Purport. Lord Krishna here proposes that modern, if absurd, philosophy that our work or occupation is really God and that we should therefore simply worship our work. Upon close scrutiny, we observe that our work is nothing more than the interaction of the material body with material nature, as Lord Krishna himself states in a more serious mood in the Bhagavad Gita. Guna guneshu vartanta. Karma mimamsa philosophy accepts that good activity in this life will give us a better next life. If this is true, then there must be some type of conclusion, some type of conscious soul different from the body. And if that is the case, why should a transcendental soul worship the interaction of a temporary body with material nature? If the words sampuyajit karma here mean that one should worship the laws of karma governing our activities, then one may astutely ask what it means to worship laws, and indeed what might be the origin of such laws, and who is maintaining them. To say that the laws have created or are maintaining the world is a meaningless proposition, since there is nothing about the nature of law that indicates it could generate existential situations and the situation it is supposed to govern. In fact, worship is meant for Krishna himself, and this real conclusion will be clearly revealed in this chapter. Translation. If one thing is actually sustaining our life, but we take shelter of something else, how can we achieve the real benefit? We would be like an unfaithful woman who can never achieve any actual benefit by consorting with her paramour. Purport. The word kshema means actual prosperity, but merely the accumulation of money. Here, Lord Krishna boldly argues that just as a woman can never achieve actual dignity or enlightenment from an illicit lover, residents of Vrindavan will never be happy by neglecting the real source of their prosperity and worshipping Indra instead. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the audacity the child Krishna displayed before his father and other elders should be understood as an exhibition of transcendental anger aroused when he saw his eternal devotees worshipping an insignificant demigod. Translation. The Brahmin maintains his life by studying and teaching the Vedas, the member of the royal order by protecting the earth, the Vaishya by trade, and the Shudra by serving the higher twice born classes. Purport. After glorifying karma or work, Lord Krishna now explains what he means by prescribed duties born of one's nature. He was not referring to any whimsical activity, but rather to the religious duties performed in the Varnashram, or Vedic social system. Translation. The occupational duties of the Vaishya are conceived in four divisions: farming, commerce, cow protection, and money lending. Out of these, we as a community are always engaged in cow protection. Translation. Causes of creation, maintenance, and destruction are the three modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. In particular, the mode of passion creates this universe, and through sexual combination causes it to become full of variety. Purport. Anticipating the possible objection that a livelihood based on cows certainly depends on Lord Indra, who supplies rain, Lord Krishna has introduced a mechanistic theory of existence known as atheistic Sankhya. The tendency to attribute exclusive causality to the apparently mechanistic functions of nature is an old tendency indeed. 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna referred to a doctrine already well known in human society. Translation. Impelled by the material modes of nature, by the material modes of passion, the clouds pour down their rain everywhere, and by this rain all creatures gain their sustenance. What has the great Indra to do with this arrangement? Purport. Lord Krishna continues his mechanistic explanation of existence, concluding, Mahendra kim karishyati, who needs this great Indra, since the rain sent by the clouds, which in turn are impelled by the mode of passion, is actually producing everyone's food. The word sarvataha indicates that the clouds magnanimously send their rain even on the ocean rocks and barren land where there is no apparent necessity for such sweet water. Translation. My dear father, our home is not in the cities or towns or villages. Being forest dwellers, we always live in the forest and on the hills. Purport. Lord Krishna here points out that the residents of Vrindavan should recognize their relationship with Govardhan Hill and with the forest of Vrindavan and not worry about a distant demigod like Indra. Having concluded his argument, Lord Krishna makes a radical proposal in the following verse. Translation. Therefore, may a sacrifice for the pleasure of the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill begin. With all the paraphernalia collected for worshipping Indra, let this sacrifice be performed instead. Purport. Lord Krishna is famous as Gobramanahita, the well-wishing friend of the cows and Brahmins. Lord Krishna specifically included the local Brahmins in his proposal because he is always devoted to those who are devoted to the godly Vedic literature. Translation. Let many different kinds of food be cooked, from sweet rice to vegetable soups. Many kinds of fancy cakes, both baked and fried, should be prepared. And all the available milk products should be taken for the sacrifice. Purport. The word supa indicates bean broth and also liquid vegetables. You must have got this word soup from this, huh? Supa. S-U-P-A. Thus, to celebrate the Govardhana Puja, Lord Krishna called for hot preparations such as soup, cold preparations like sweet rice, and all types of milk products. Translation. The Brahmins who are learned in the Vedic mantras must properly invoke the sacrificial fires. Then you should feed the priests with nicely prepared food and reward them with cows and other gifts. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Sri Krishna instructed his father and residents of Vrindavan in the technical details of this Vedic sacrifice to assure the quality of the sacrifice and also to inspire Nanda and others with faith in the concept of such a sacrifice. Thus the Lord mentioned that there must be orthodox Brahmins, regular sacrificial fires, and proper distribution of charity, and things were to be done in the order given by the Lord. Translation. After giving the appropriate food to everyone else, including such fallen souls as dogs and dog-eaters, you should give grass to the cows and then present your respectful obeisances to Govardhan Hill. Translation. After everyone has eaten to his satisfaction, you should all dress and decorate yourselves handsomely. Smear your bodies with sandalwood paste, and then circumambulate the cows, the Brahmins, the sacrificial fires, and Govardhan Hill. Purport. Lord Krishna wanted all the human beings, and even the animals, to eat nice Bhagavat Prasadam, sanctified foods offered to the Lord. To enthuse his relatives with a festive mood, he requested them to dress beautifully with fine clothes and ornaments, and to refresh their bodies with luxurious sandalwood paste. The essential activity, however, was a circumambulation of the holy Brahmins, cows, sacrificial fires, and especially Govardhan Hill. Translation. This is my idea, O Father, and you may carry it out if it appeals to you. Such a sacrifice will be very dear to the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill, and also to me. Purport. Whatever is pleasing to the Brahmins, the cows, and the Supreme Lord himself is auspicious and beneficial for the entire world. Spiritually blind, quote, modern, end quote, people do not understand this and instead adopt a, quote, scientific, end quote, approach to life that is rapidly destroying the entire earth. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna, who is himself powerful time, desired to destroy the false pride of Lord Indra. When Nanda and the other senior men of Vrindavan heard Lord Krishna's statement, they accepted his words as proper. Translation. The cowherd community then did all that Madhusudana had suggested. They arranged for the Brahmins to recite the auspicious Vedic mantras, and using the paraphernalia that had been intended for Indra's sacrifice, they presented offerings to Govardhan Hill and the Brahmins with reverential respect. They also gave grass to the cows. Then, placing the cows, bulls, and calves in front of them, they circumambulated Govardhan. Purport. The residents of Vrindavan were simply devoted to Lord Krishna. That was the sum and substance of their existence. Being the Lord's eternal associates, they were ultimately not concerned with Lord Indra or ritualistic sacrifice, and they were certainly not interested in the mechanistic philosophy that Krishna had just spoken to them. They simply loved Krishna, and out of intense affection, they did exactly what he had requested. Their simple loving mentality was not small-mindedness or ignorance, since they were devoted to the Supreme Absolute Truth, who contains within himself all existence. Thus, the residents of Vrindavan constantly experience the highest essential truth underlying all other truths, and that is Sri Krishna himself, the cause of all causes, and that which sustains the existence of all that exists. The residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed in loving service to the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, they were most fortunate, most intelligent, and most pragmatic of all living beings. Translation. As the beautifully ornamented cowherd ladies followed along, riding on wagons drawn by oxen, they sang the glories of Lord Krishna, and their songs mingled with the Brahmins' chanting and benedictions. Translation. Krishna then assumed an unprecedented huge form to instill faith in the cowherd men, declaring, quote, "I am Govardhan Mountain," end quote. He ate the abundant offerings. Purport. In chapter 24, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada writes, "When everything was complete, Krishna assumed a great transcendental form and declared to the inhabitants of Vrindavan that he was himself Govardhan Hill, in order to convince the devotees that Govardhan Hill and Krishna are identical. Then Krishna began to eat all the food offered there. The identity of Krishna and Govardhan Hill is still honored. And great devotees take rocks from Govardhan Hill and worship them, exactly as they worship the deity of Krishna in the temples. Devotees therefore collect small rocks or pebbles from Govardhan Hill and worship them at home, because this worship is as good as deity worship." Lord Krishna had induced the residents of Vrindavan to assume significant risk on his behalf. He convinced them to neglect the sacrifice to what is, after all, the powerful government of the universe, and to worship a hill called Govardhan instead. The cowherd community did all this simply out of love for Krishna, and now to convince them that their decision was correct, Lord Krishna appeared as an unprecedented, huge, transcendental form and demonstrated that he himself is Govardhan Hill. So there's a couple of more, two, three more verses in this chapter. I thought maybe I'd like to ask Ranchor Prabhu to make some comment if you'd like before we carry on. Since you're a worshipper of the Shilas. Want to add anything? Just say some things. Translation. Together with the people of Raj, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus in effect offering obeisances to himself. Then he said, "Just see how this hill has appeared in person and bestowed mercy upon us." Purport. It is clear from this verse that Lord Krishna had expanded himself and was appearing in his normal form among the festival goers of Vrindavan while simultaneously manifesting himself as the great form of Govardhan Hill. Thus, in his form as a child, Krishna led the residents of Vrindavan in bowing down to his new incarnation as Govardhan Hill. And to all, he pointed out the great mercy bestowed by this divine form of Govardhan. Lord Krishna's amazing transcendental activities were certainly in keeping with the festive atmosphere. Translation. This Govardhan Hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. Purport. Kamarupi indicates, that's the word used in this verse, that the form of Govardhan can manifest as poisonous snakes, wild animals, falling rocks, and so on, all of which are competent to kill a human being. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the Lord represented six theoretical points in this chapter. One, that karma alone is sufficient to determine one's destiny. Two, that one's conditioned nature is the supreme controller. Three, that the modes of nature are the supreme controller. Four, that the Supreme Lord is simply a dependent aspect of karma. 5. That he is under the control of karma. And 6. That one's occupation is the actual worshipable deity. The Lord represents these arguments not because he believed them, but rather because he wanted to stop the impending sacrifice to Indra and divert it to himself in the form of Govardhan Hill. In this way, the Lord desired to agitate that falsely proud demigod. Of course, we find among many people who follow Vedic literature and read Bhagavad Gita that they also think that the Gita proposes or promotes this philosophy that what they call work being worship, or that one can worship one's own occupation, and they quote many verses like Karmane Varikaraste Mapalesha Kadachana to say that this is actually Krishna's teaching. So as was pointed out, these are not new ideas, but very old, since the living being has had the freedom to act against the laws of the Lord since time immemorial. So the last verse says, the members of the cowherd community, having thus been inspired by Lord Vasudeva to properly execute the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill, the cows and the Brahmins returned with Lord Krishna to their village Vraja. Report. Although the Govardhana Puja was performed in a blissful and successful way, the matter was hardly finished. Lord Indra is, after all, tremendously powerful, and he received the news of the Govardhan sacrifice with burning anger. What ensued will be described in the following chapter. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their Lord. Purport. At the very beginning of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami reveals the foolishness of Indra and the absurdity of his anger. Indra was frustrated because the residents of Vrindavan accepted Sri Krishna as their Lord. But the simple fact is that Sri Krishna is the Lord, not only of the residents of Vrindavan, but of all that exists, including Indra himself. Thus Indra's petulant reaction was ridiculous. As the common saying goes, pride goes before a fall. Translation. Angry Indra set forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as Samvartaka, imagining himself in the 20th century have noted the exaggerated sense of individual prestige characteristic of our culture. Indeed, writers have even coined the phrase the me generations. Everyone in this world is more or less guilty of the syndrome called Ishamana, or proudly considering oneself the Lord. Translation. Indra said, just see how these cowherd men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. Purport. Of course, Indra was really saying that the cowherd men had offended him, Indra, by taking shelter of Krishna, whom Indra considered to be Martya, immortal. This was certainly a gross miscalculation on Indra's part. Translation. Their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruitive ritual sacrifices. Translation. These cowherd men have acted inimically toward me, taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, Gada Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. The Acharya explains, Valisham means free from pretension, just like a child. Stavdam means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. Agya means that there is nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient. Pandita Manina means that he is highly honored by the absolute knowers, by the knowers of the absolute truth. And Krishnam means that the Supreme Personality, and Krishna means he is the Supreme Absolute Truth, whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Martya means that although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna as Vatsalam, because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Karma Mimamsa and Sankhya philosophy, even though he did not accept these arguments. Thus Indra called the Lord Balisha, foolish. Indra called him Stavda, because he had spoken boldly, even in the presence of his own father. Thus, although Indra attempted to criticize Sri Krishna, the Lord's transcendental character is in fact impeccable, and this chapter will demonstrate how Indra came to recognize the position of the Lord. Translation. To the clouds of destruction, King Indra said, "The prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction." Purport. It is clear from this verse that the residents of Vrindavan had become highly prosperous simply by protecting cows, since Indra wanted to destroy their so-called pride based on wealth by killing their animals. Well-tended cows produce large quantities of milk, from which come cheese, butter, yogurt, ghee, and so on. These fruits are delicious by themselves and also enhance other foods, such as fruits, vegetables, and grains. Breads and vegetables are delicious with butter, and fruit is especially appetizing when mixed with cream or yogurt. Dairy products are always desirable in civilized society, and the surplus can be traded for many valuable commodities. Thus, simply by a Vedic dairy enterprise, the residents of Vrindavan were wealthy, healthy, and happy, even in the material sense, and most of all, they were eternal associates of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Translation. I will follow you to Braj, riding on my elephant, Airavata, and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. Purport. The Samvartaka clouds were frightened by Indra's powerful mood and thus carried out his order as described in the following verse. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the cowherd pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Purport. The Samvartaka clouds could cover the entire earth with a single entire earth with a single vast ocean. With great strength, these clouds began flooding the simple land of Braj. Translation. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. Purport. Srila Sridhar Goswami explains that the word Maruganai indicates that the seven great winds, such as Avaha, who resides over the region of Vuvarloka, and Pravaha, who holds the planets in their places. Translation. As the clouds released torrents of rain as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. Translation. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the cowherd men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Translation. Trembling from the distress brought about by severe rainfall and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The cowherd men and women addressed the Lord, "Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees. Please save us also." Purport. At the time of Lord Krishna's birth, Gargamuni had predicted, "Anena sarva durgani yuyam anjast tarishyata." By his grace, you will easily cross beyond all difficulties. The residents of Vrindavan were confident that in such great emergency, Lord Sri Narayan would empower Krishna to protect them. They accepted Krishna as everything, and Krishna reciprocated their love. Translation. Seeing the inhabitants of his Gokula rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was the work of angry Indra. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the severe distress Indra apparently inflicted upon the residents of Vrindavan was an arrangement made by Sri Krishna's pastime potency to enhance the loving dealings between the residents and the Lord. The Acharya gives the analogy for a hungry person. The pain of hunger increases the happiness he feels when he finally eats excellent food, and thus hunger can be said to enhance the pleasure of eating. Similarly, the residents of Vrindavan, although not experiencing ordinary material anxiety, felt a type of distress at the activities of Indra and thus intensified their meditation on Krishna. When the Lord finally acted, the result was wonderful. Translation. Sri Krishna said to himself, "Because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence. Now, to foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Translation. Since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. Purport. Demigods are supposed to be sadbhava yukta, endowed with spiritual existence, since they are deputed servants of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that which is duly offered to the Lord becomes spiritualized. The demigods engage in the devotional service of the Lord by managing various departments of cosmic administration. Therefore, as demigods, or as servants of the Lord, their existence is pure, sadbhava. When the demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord and deviate from the proper behavior, they are not acting as demigods, but rather as conditioned souls. Mana, or false prestige, is certainly an anxiety-ridden burden for the conditioned soul. A falsely proud person is not peaceful or satisfied because his understanding of himself is false and inflated. When a servant of the Lord becomes asat, or irreligious, the Lord saves him from impiety by breaking the false prestige that has led him to be offensive or sinful. As stated by the Lord himself, Yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanam shanai, I give my blessings to a person by taking away his so-called opulence. Of course, the advanced stage of devotional service to the Lord, as described by Rupa Goswami, is yukta vairagya, utilizing the opulence of this world to execute the Lord's mission. Obviously, the things of this world can be used wonderfully to spread the glories of God and to create a godly society. And a more advanced devotee will not be seduced by material paraphernalia, but will dutifully and honestly engage it solely for the pleasure of the Lord. In this particular case, Lord Indra forgot that he was a humble servant of God, and Lord Krishna therefore arranged to bring this bewildered demigod to his senses. Translation. I must therefore protect the cowherd community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Purport. The word much charanam indicates not only that Lord Krishna was the sole shelter for the Vrajajana, the people of Vrindavan, but also that Lord Krishna had established his home among them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes from the Anekartavarga dictionary, Sharanam Griha Rakshitro. The word Sharanam can represent either home or protector. The residents of Vrindavan adopted Krishna as their beloved child, friend, lover, and life itself, and the Lord reciprocated their feelings. Thus, Sri Krishna lived amongst these fortunate people, moving in their houses and fields. Naturally, he would protect such intimate devotees from all types of danger. Translation. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. Purport. It is confirmed in the Harivamsa that Sri Krishna picked up the Govardhan Mountain with his left hand. Sadrita Sangato Megar Giri Savyena Panina. With his left hand, he picked up that mountain which was touching the clouds. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Lord Krishna was preparing to lift Govardhan Hill, a partial expansion of his Yogamaya potency named Samariki temporarily removed all the rain from the sky, so that as he ran very swiftly from the porch to the house to the mountain, neither his turban nor other garments became wet. So many transcendental aspects of this pastime are going on here. It's not just that as a small, apparently, child, he was able to lift something very heavy, but he lifted it with one hand and he transferred it to the finger of another hand. Now, this is also, just as it's impossible to not be wet by rain or to stop rain from a material perspective, it's impossible for a hand or something with a small surface to lift up a big hill. Because, as you know, the Govardhan Hill is not just a big rock, it's a hill full of rocks, and there's dirt between those rocks. So there was another mystic potency that took place, such that the whole hill was held together as one piece instead of falling to pieces, which it would do if it was just lifted up by some small hand that wasn't spiritually potent enough to see that the whole thing stayed together. Translation. The Lord then addressed the cowherd community. O mother, O father, O residents of Raja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur provides the following insight in this regard. Ordinarily, a large cowherd community which included many thousands of cows, calves, bulls, and so on, could not fit under the base of a medium-sized hill like Sri Govardhan. However, because the hill was in ecstasy, being touched by the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it acquired inconceivable power and even fell the hundreds of deadly thunderbolts thrown upon its back by angry Indra to be offerings of soft, fragrant flowers. At times, Sri Govardhan was not even aware that the thunderbolts were striking. From the Hari Vamsa, the Acharya has also quoted Sri Krishna himself as saying, Trilokyam api utsahate rakshitum kim punaya vrajam. Sri Govardhan can give shelter to all three worlds. What to speak of the simple land of Raj? When Indra's attack began and Krishna lifted the hill, the deer, wild hogs, and other animals and birds standing on the hill's flanks climbed up to its peaks, and even they did not experience the slightest distress. So there's other mystical potencies being exhibited, that they were above the hill, and yet they were not feeling the torrents, the pain of the rain, the hail, and so on. Translation. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand, and don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Translation. Their minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants, and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. So all of these things are baffling the material way of thinking, that everyone could crowd under the hill, even though they really wouldn't fit there, but from a material point of view. Purport. All the domestic animals of Vrindavan were brought beneath Govardhan Hill for shelter. Translation. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst and putting aside all other considerations of personal pleasure, stood there, holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Raj gazed upon him. According to the Vishnu Purana, Lord Krishna held up the mountain while his praises were chanted by the residents of Raj, all of whom had now the opportunity to dwell together with him and who glanced at him with joyful and amazed eyes. Thus the cowherd men and women were all elated, and out of loving affection they opened their eyes wide. By continuing drinking nectar, the nectar of the beauty and sweetness of Sri Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan felt no hunger, thirst, or fatigue, and Lord Krishna, by seeing their beautiful forms, also forgot about eating, drinking, and sleeping. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that 7 days of continuous rain from the Samvartaka clouds failed to flood the district of Mathura because the Supreme Lord, simply by his potency, immediately dried up the water as it fell to the ground. Thus Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill is full of fascinating details and has, for thousands of years, remained one of his most famous pastimes. Translation. When Indra observed this exhibition of Lord Krishna's mystic power, he became most astonished. Pulled down from his platform of false pride and his intentions toward him, he ordered the clouds to desist. Translation. Seeing that the fierce wind and rain had now ceased, the sky had become clear of rain clouds, and the sun had risen, Lord Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, spoke to the cowherd community as follows. Translation. Lord Krishna said, "My dear cowherd men, please go out with your wives, children, and possessions. Give up your fear. The wind and rain have stopped, and the river's high waters have subsided." Translation. After collecting their respective cows and loading their paraphernalia into their wagons, the cowherd men went out. The women, children, and elderly persons gradually followed them. Translation. While all living creatures looked on, the Supreme Personality of God had put down the hill in its original place, just as it had stood before. Translation. All the residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and they came forward and greeted Sri Krishna according to their individual relationships with him, some embracing him, others bowing down to him, and so forth. The cowherd women presented water mixed with yogurt and unbroken barley corns as a token of honor, and they showered auspicious benedictions upon him. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that each of the residents of Vrindavan regarded Krishna in his own way, as an inferior, younger member of the community, as an equal, or as a superior. And they dealt with him accordingly. Krishna's superiors offered auspicious benedictions, lovingly smelled his head, kissed him, rubbed his arms and fingers, and inquired with parental affection as to whether he was tired or pained. Krishna's equals laughed or joked with him, and those who were younger fell at his feet, massaged his feet, and so on. The word cha in this verse indicates that the wives of the Brahmins joined with the cowherd ladies to offer auspicious items like yogurt and unbroken grains. Lord Sri Krishna received benedictions such as this. May you subdue the wicked, protect the distant people, give pleasure to your parents, and be enriched with all wealth and opulence. Translation. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda Maharaj, and Balaram, the greatest of the strong, all embraced Krishna, overwhelmed with affection. They offered him their blessings. Translation. In the heavens, O King of all demigods, including Siddhas, Sadhas, Gandharvas, and Charanas, sang the praises of Lord Krishna and showered down flowers in great satisfaction. Purport. The demigods in heaven were just as jubilant as the residents of Vrindavan, and thus a great universal festival took place. Translation. My dear Parikshit, the demigods in heaven resoundingly played their conch shells and kettle drums, and the best of the Gandharvas, led by Tumburu, began to sing. And this is the last verse. Surrounded by his loving cowherd boyfriends and Lord Balaram, Krishna went off to the place where he had been tending his cows. The cowherd girls returning to their home, singing joyfully about the lifting of Govardhan Hill and other glorious deeds performed by Lord Krishna, who had so deeply touched their hearts. Purport. Before returning to their homes, the gopis shared their intimate association with their lover, Sri Krishna, by exchanging secret glances. Ordinarily, they could not publicly talk about Krishna, since they were chaste young girls in a religious village, but now they took advantage of this wonderful exhibition by the Lord and freely sang of his beautiful qualities. It is natural that a young man wants to do something wonderful in the presence of a beautiful young girl. The gopis were the most beautiful and pure-hearted young girls, and Sri Krishna performed the most wonderful activities in their presence. Thus, he entered deep within their tender hearts, enlivening their eternal devotion to him. So that's the end of the chapter. I'm sure, Prabhu. Want to say something? He's, of course, just being humble because he could add oceans of words to what I've said, but I think I have to bow to your request. So, any other comments or questions? Prabhupada also mentioned it once, that cowherd men were trying to help Krishna because of their intimate association, their intimate relationship with Krishna. As is mentioned here, they see Krishna as their intimate friend and forget that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that they were praying that he would be blessed by Narayan, to be protected, and so on. So I asked Mother Yashoda, Prabhupada once said that the prerogative of a great devotee, and he was mentioning Mother Yashoda, is to have such great affection for the Lord, of course, in this particular rasa, the Purana Vatsalya Rasa, that she would think of him as her dear son, and that she would have to feed him. And if she didn't feed him, that he would die. Prabhupada said that this is different from worshipping simply in awe and reverence, as some say that God give me my daily bread. That's the ethos of Christianity. People say, God, please give me my daily bread. And the prerogative of the great devotee is to think that if I don't give God his bread, he will die. So in that way they had an intimate relationship with Krishna, and they also wanted to protect him and wish him, as we were reading, wish him well and pray for his protection. So they were also thinking that he needs some help like this. So they were putting their canes up to help him over the hill. Anything else?
Yes.
So this is the time when everybody in the cell
The residents of Vrindavan always think of Krishna as their dear friend. And even when they see that he exhibits supremely powerful pastimes and remember or think that he must be the Supreme Lord, because they are very fixed in their original sarupa, their relationship with Krishna, as his different relatives or friends or parents, as it's been said here. And they're relating to him in different ways. They remain in this realization, because this is their eternal sarupa, or their siddha finale, or their siddha deha, their eternal relationship with Krishna. So just as with Indra, sometimes Krishna has to remind him about things. Because his relationship with Indra is different. The relationship with Indra is that he's not a pure devotee. So as a demigod, he's forgetful. Krishna has to remind them. So with the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna has to remind them that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in their ordinary dealings, they just see Krishna as their dearmost friend. And this is the more intimate relationship with Krishna. They're always fixed in this relationship. But in the beginning, we always have to approach Krishna with awe and reverence so that we will never forget, like the demigods do, our position of Krishna's eternal servant. So we always begin with this, and therefore we, in our deity worship, we worship Krishna in this way, with great awe and reverence, great opulence, many offerings every day, and always offering our obeisances and bowing down, and always regarding him as being the Supreme Lord. So the Radha Krishna worship here is like Lakshmi Narayan worship. We're worshiping Krishna in that reverential way, so that we maintain a proper attitude. But for the self-realized and pure devotees who have their spiritual bodies, they fully realize Krishna in that very intimate exchange. In their eternal rasas. Yes, they immediately resume their relationship with Krishna, original relationship. Yeah. I'm sorry, couldn't hear you. Come to be there? Why is it there? Well, it's there just because Krishna's there. It's just part of Krishna's pastimes, part of Krishna's lila. So when he says that he became Govardhan Hill, it's not that he got there for the first time, but he manifested himself and made it apparent to everyone, first of all, that Krishna's non-different from anything, material and spiritual. And secondly, that he could personally manifest himself within anything, any object, just like he's present fully within the deity, or a Govardhan Shila, or a Shalagram Shila. He's fully present in his name, he's present in his books, he's present in his devotees. So he demonstrated the quality that he could actually fully become manifest in his personality as the hill, and he exhibited this form. It's also said that he exhibited a very large form of a person at the same time. So Krishna can do anything. He can become something that's already there. He can manifest in something that's already there. He can also remove something. So there's just another aspect of Krishna's lila. Krishna has things that are connected with him which are equally worshipable as Krishna himself. Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Lord Shiva says to Parvati, the question that Parvati asked is that what is the most worshipable object? And Krishna, and Lord Shiva's response was that that Vishnu worship is the highest worship. Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Tasmat Paradhanam Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. But worship of things connected with Krishna is even more worshipable than worship of Krishna. So some of these Tadiyana things are devotees, they're tulsis, they're shalagrams, they're things connected with Krishna. And of course Krishna incarnated as Lord Chaitanya also as a devotee and worshipped himself many times, especially in the rasa of the Vatiyatra when he was following the car. There was a very potent exchange between Lord Chaitanya and Lord Jagannath. They're both Krishna, but they were playing different roles, Krishna as the devotee. And so there was a very intimate exchange going on. So Krishna is one with his creation, but he also can act in the role of a devotee. So we worship Govardhan as Krishna, we worship Govardhan Shilas as worshipable objects connected with Krishna. And we can see them as also devotees of Krishna, because everything connected with Krishna is devotional or a devotee. You want to add to that, Rancho? You're a Shila worshipper. Do you want to say anything more about Giri Govardhan being a devotee? Yes. Govardhana Puja Ki Jai. Shri Shri Govardhana Puja Maho Mahatsava Ki Jai.
Swami Grace Kukunda Goswami Ki
Jai.
All those are Shiguru and Shivaram.